got the Open Meetings Act posted on the door in the back on the door. Quorum call.
Here.
Sabinski.
Here.
Teaser.
Here.
And Chairperson.
Here. Item number four, adoption of agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Motion is second. Any discussion? Roll call.
Yes.
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
Aye. Item number five, proof of publication of the meeting notice. We have a copy of that that will be put with the minutes of the meeting. Item number six, presentation of the integrated management plan review. Paul Woodard and Melissa Moser, Nebraska Department of Natural Resources.
All right, good afternoon. Melissa Moser with Nebraska DNR is just getting in the door, so we'll go ahead and get started. Luckily, the first part of the presentation was mine to cover. So we've been doing this every year. It's going through an annual update of our integrated management plan. If you go to the next slide, Bill. I don't have a projector. I kind of put this together to kind of show how the different plans work together. So you can see our IMP is down there at the bottom. A lot of information feeds into it. It's our local plan between us and DNR on addressing water quantity for the most part in hydrologically connected areas. So how much water is in the stream, how much water is in our groundwater aquifer, back and forth, and we're working together on that, and that's what this plan is all about. So the other things you hear about, like the basin plan, with us and all the other NRDs in the Lower Platte Basin, plays a part in setting that up. The drought contingency plan we've worked on plays a part in that. All the technical information we gather from other studies plays a part in that. And then ultimately some of the IMP flows into our actual groundwater management plan, and that's a plan that's just ours alone that we implement here in our district. So go ahead. The IMP was adopted in 2014, had four major goals, policies and practices to look at, a water supply and use inventory, and that's pretty much been rolled over into how we do the basin plan. Is that not on? Educational programs that we do as part of the IMP or take credit for, and then a basin-wide water management plan, which again is a component of what we worked on with the other NRDs. So, why we conduct the joint annual reviews is because we really want to see if anything new has changed, identify those new opportunities, bring in new data. So again, every year we're assessing if we have new information, is that going to change something we should be doing as part of the plan? Look at how far we've come towards meeting our goals and objectives, and then prioritizing what we're going to do next. So that's what we're going to cover with you here tonight. Go ahead. Just so you, to get everybody familiar with the map, so our IMP area is not our whole district. It is just the area that drains to the Platte or Elkhorn River. So it makes up part of Washington, Douglas, and Sarpy County. Then go ahead. Then the area in blue, in particular, is what is now considered the hydrologically connected area. And so within that area, we have right now adopted controls of limiting how much new groundwater irrigation can be done and how much new surface water irrigation can be implemented. And that right now is one of the things we're going to talk about tonight a little bit, what might be changing with that in the future. There's modeling going on. It's some of the reasons that we're getting the AEM data that we're going to talk about too later in the agenda and how we're using that in groundwater models. So it's an important aspect of this is that blue area will likely be changing in the future. And then how do we make this consistent with what our basin plan currently says? So that's part of that. We've never really had a problem. Like we first come, first serve. We let people that want to develop new irrigated acres come in. Other districts typically have to have like a sign-up period or something like that. We've never had enough demand to make that a requirement. So this really hasn't been a problem in the past, but as we expand that area or look at a lower number of acres, we might need to do something more along those lines. Go ahead. So I'm going to go over some of the data collection monitoring for the last year in 2019. And then Melissa Mosier with DNR is going to go over some of the monitoring they've had for their surface water permitting activities and some of the gauge sites that they have. So, first are for our groundwater level measurements for 2019. What that map is showing is that generally as what you'll see from all the rest of the data, as a very year with a lot of course, flooding and a lot of water, we certainly didn't have any declines in groundwater levels. All the wells that we measured were at or were well above their average, so we were in good shape of not having any declines there. Go ahead. In terms of what we've permitted over the years, since we've been tracking it in 2009, of different amounts of irrigated acres. The one on the left is the entire hydrologically connected area, and then the table on the right is the area above Louisville, which really plays into the accounting numbers that we do. But in 2019, we didn't have any new irrigated acres in anywhere. So whether that was an effect of after the flood or what was going on there, but no new applications at that time or variances. Go ahead. And then we have been, over the past several years since we adopted the IMP, getting water use numbers from all our municipalities. And this would only include wells that are actually within our district on our side of the river. But you see that fluctuates a little bit, but we've been a little more consistent over 2018 and 2019. We did note you see some changes between what Lincoln's pulled out at different times, what MUD's gotten, and some of that's post-flood related. Lincoln had to shift a little bit of their wells and their usage over the past year to do that, and MUD has done the same between whether they're drawing it from the well fields or whether they're getting it from the Missouri River. So this is just an accounting of what they get from the well fields. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. I'm Melissa Mosier with the Department of Natural Resources. As Paul said, I'm going to do just some reporting on the data that we collected, the department collected in 2019 for our IMP purposes. For surface water permitting, we only approved one temporary application for a road construction project within the IMP area. Within the rest of the your guidance district, we also approved three more surface water applications. Thank you. And that, it's hard to see here, but there is a star there where that one temporary permit within the IMP area, where that location is, where it was permitted. And for stream gauging, we're also required to collect data on stream gauging. Oh, thank you. Yep. That's helpful. So DNR doesn't have any of the stream gauges that we operate in the IMP area, but there are a number of USGS gauges, so we collect stream gauging data from those. And the next few slides show what we collected for 2019, but also previous years that gauge has been in operation. This one is at Lashara, Waterloo, and then Louisville. I guess if you want to take a closer look at those, we also included an annual trend line on those as well. So there's a little bit more information on those. We also do voluntary surface water use reporting, where we contact all of the surface water users and we ask them to report on, you know, whether or not they irrigated, what they irrigated with, kind of what happened during that season. So this shows how many forms were sent out to irrigators over the past 5 years, and 2019 is at the bottom there. It also shows how many responses we received back from the irrigators and the response rate for those. And then our field office staff, they do pump site inspections every year. The goal is to get to all the surface water diversions, which are shown in those triangles there on that map. So those are all of our points of diversion. And then we also have in that table showing how many pumps were actually inspected each year, the past 3 years. So last year we actually only had one site inspected just because it was a pretty busy year for field office staff. But that's unusual. Go ahead.
So just where we're at in meeting our goals, I'm going to go through those briefly. So goal one was the water use policies and practices. Under that one, we have a number of different objectives we were trying to do. Continuing support for the weed management area and agency. Of course, we've been doing that on an annual basis. That helps free keep water in the river because there's not as many invasive plants out there utilizing and evaporating the water. Continuing our work with the basin plan. Again, we're in that first increment ending 2021. That's an important date to consider. As we move forward, as we discuss the modeling a little bit more, that's where it might become, or it's going to become a point of discussion as to whether we extend that or go into a new period. And that's being worked out between all the basin members, the Loops, the Elkhorns, and the Lower Platte NRDs and DNR. And then our groundwater management plan, we did a brand new one, revised and adopted in March 2018, and we're implementing that. And then the drought contingency plan was adopted last December. Go ahead. So in terms of maintaining our supply and use inventory, we have completed a couple studies and some water balance information. One thing our district has not done that we still need to kind of get over the hump and do is to certify irrigated acres. So we have, when we get into that modeling, we'll have a much better idea of, yes, we know for sure that this field is irrigated or has the potential to be irrigated because that's put into the model and that use is incorporated. So it'd be nice if we knew exactly what we're doing there so we're not overestimating that potential use. We've collected the municipal water data, which you saw. We're enhancing weather and climate data if we can within the IMP area. We have one weather station. We've helped work with the state climate office there. But that weather information really becomes vital as, you know, we need to know how much it rained for that year to make an accurate reporting of water in and out and those different things. So that's part of that. The Lower Platte TRIBS model, maybe go to the next slide. So I'll let you address those couple things on where we're at with the modeling.
Yep. So the initial development of the Lower Platte Missouri TRIBS model has been completed. And right now we're working on a few kind of extra things. So we're doing a pilot study in Lower Elkhorn NRD, and that's where they're trying to work on incorporating that AEM data into the model. So that's going to be really important and to see how that goes so we can get that AEM data incorporated into the rest of the model. Lower Platte North, Lower Platte South, and Papio are preparing to submit a Water Sustainability Fund grant application to help out with that incorporation of that AEM data. So that's something you'll hear about hopefully soon. So the next slide. So another thing that we're working on is just, you know, refining the stream depletion factors in the model. That's going on model-wide. It's important to note here that, you know, the NRD use of this, you know, we're partners with the NRDs throughout the Lower Platte Basin on this model development. And this is going to be really important for the NRDs to use as their tools, but also to have this shared information. We also have a NEMAHA model that will be in development in the coming years. So that lower portion of the state and the basin hasn't been completed yet, but once we get this Lower Missouri TRIBS model done, then we'll work on that.
Okay. The last couple goals is educational programs. We've tried to make groundwater and surface water a more prevalent discussion at our World of Water public event. We were able to do that in 2019. I guess it will remain to be seen whether that's even a possibility in 2020. As that goes along, we have adopted the cost share program, if you remember, to work with local irrigators, local landowners on soil moisture sensors and flow meters. Go ahead. Here's just a highlights of some of the events. And then, of course, DNR was actually active in more events than that, so we put that in the report. They were at Husker Harvest Days, the State Fair, the NRD Fall Conference, things like that. Go ahead. The different tools, you want to touch on those real quick?
Yeah, so you might have heard before, I know we reported on this in our at least our last report last year, but Insight is a online tool that we have where people can look at water use throughout the state and look at the difference between supply and demand. And this has been in development for quite a number of years, and we've been gradually adding more and more data to it. And that picture of Insight up there hasn't been updated yet, but last year we did get the Upper Platte River Basin data added to it, so we have pretty much the whole state covered there. So that's a nice resource if you'd like to look at it. We also have on our website two interactive web tools. They are something that we use at our public outreach events to show people how it's a way to show people how the surface water and groundwater are connected. And so those have been useful too. So if that's ever something that you think would be helpful to you, or if you just want to check it out, the website is there.
The final goal was to work with the rest of the Platte River Basin, which we're doing through the basin plan. Every year there's an annual report for that covers more of the accounting, things like that. So if you're interested, that's available online as well. And then we participated in the drought mitigation, drought contingency plan that was approved through the Bureau. Right now we're just working together on that to keep monitoring drought conditions. And then all the partners in that, including Lincoln and MUD, would work on things, responses to if we had a severe drought. So, which drought's creeping up a little bit in some of the areas. We still have a lot of water basically in storage from last year throughout a lot of the lower Platte Basin, including the Loups and the Elkhorns. So stream flows have not suffered, but things are changing a little bit out there. So go ahead. So our actions for the next 2 years, what we want to do, we might look an amendment to the IMP, and I'll touch on that here in a minute, to be consistent with the basin plan. We're continuing to work on the groundwater model and what those change in the hydrologic connected area will look like. We're going to try to incorporate and utilize the AEM data, and that's what we're going to talk about at the end of the PPO agenda here, is to, how do we take that AEM data that we've put a lot of effort into and bring that in so we can actually use it into a groundwater model. So there's a couple more steps there. Continue with the basin-wide efforts and planning with everybody. As part of the drought contingency plan, there might be a tabletop exercise, or there will be coming up that you want to keep an eye out for. I think it's internal to figure out how that we're going to look at that first. And then we'll probably bring some of the results of that to you to share. The NRA annual meeting. I don't have too much else on the other ones here. We tentatively want to participate in the public outreach events if we can, but that's pretty much up in the air right now. And we need to do the certified irrigated acres, as I said. So go ahead. Here's what we mean by having to amend our IMP. If we were to change things based on the recommendations from the basin plan, so instead of us allowing 2,500 irrigated acres every year, breaking that down based on the numbers that we have, it would probably be more like 600 acres a year, which again hasn't been a problem based on how many people have required or asked us to increase irrigation. And then DNR through the same split would be about 135 acres of new surface water permission. So anything else on that, Melissa? So we're basically still evaluating whether we're going to make those changes or whether we're going to wait till this model development kind of takes place and then see if other changes are necessary at that time. Okay, go ahead. Here's where our counting is at the end of 2019. So we've used very little of our actual acre feet in the basin plan, and that's what's reported in our annual report for the basin plan. So, most of that has come through a few new surface water depletion permissions granted by DNR. go ahead. All right, with that, Melissa and I would be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Is there anyone from the public wish to say anything? Directors? Larry?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a question on the integration of data, and you're going to apply for a grant, and from whom that grant application is going to be made to?
Yeah, the grant would be made to the Water Sustainability Fund. What we'll talk about later is it's an under $250,000 grant, and that would allow all three of us, the Lower Platte NRDs, Lower Platte South, Lower Platte North, and us, to basically take the AM data and put it into layers that can be used in the geologic model. So it's a step you have to go through to take the information that we got, you know, all that great information about the resistivity and the different geologies that we found with the AEM information.
Oh, I'm with you, man.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what the purpose of that okay. grant would be for.
But the WSF grant.
WSF grant, okay. Yep.
Questions? Roll call.
Thank you.
Thank you. Item number 7, review and recommendation of the No Name Dyke Culvert Rehabilitation Project. Martin Cleveland.
Evening. Go to that map, Bill.
Here you go. This project was built in the late 1980s, actually rebuilt late in the 1980s. It ties into Union Dyke, and it's actually from basically Blonda Street north of Maple up to UP railroad tracks, which essentially is 2 miles. In the late 1980s, we put in these twin 48-inch CMPs, and unfortunately now their lifespan has ended, and they're perforated. We need to rehab those, so we've hired Fire Engineering to design the rehab for those, and we then have bid that project out and received bids in June. Maybe go to the bid summary, if you could, Bill. Thank you. Received two bids, one from Pat Thomas Construction in Lincoln, Nebraska, and Niwauer out of Ottawa, Iowa. And the low bid is from Pat Thomas at $278,941. Engineer's estimate is at $290,413. So as you can see on this bid summary, bids are very close to each other and also very close to the engineer's estimate, which is as good as you can hope on a project that it comes in this close. The project will consist of inserting a new pipe inside the old pipe. It's going to be a plastic pipe, and then grouting between the two pipes, and then also dewatering at this structure, and then replacing some riprap as well. So this is all going to be, levee will be in place. We'll just be doing the work underneath the levee, so we'll keep protection throughout the event. We won't be endangering the levee by any of the work we're doing on this pipe structure. Timing-wise, the board approves it in July. They'll be starting work probably in August, which is a good time of year to be doing work on the Platte River because of lower water levels. And so, again, that's kind of a summary of the project. We'd recommend that you would accept the bid from Pat Thomas Construction of $278,941. I'll be happy to answer any questions you have about this.
Any questions? Anyone from the audience? Directors? Roll call.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
Item number 8, review and recommendation of Dakota County Rural Water, Grappler Lake, Hubbard, and Fiddler Creek Water Main Extension USDA funding agreement.
Good afternoon. If you guys were paying attention yesterday, John had kind of mentioned a project coming up in Dakota County where we've been kind of pursuing federal dollars. Back in February, I brought before you a contract with Olson to design water main extension out to the Cramper Lake Danish Alps recreation area. Now that design is far enough along, We've talked to a number of different governmental agencies, including WEWAC, which is an organization comprised of members of Department of Health and Human Services, NDEQ, a lot of other entities, and the EPA. And what they do is they review a project and determine what type of funding mechanisms are out there and what makes the most sense in order to kind of get a project going. So after a lot of coordination with WEWAC, the USDA Rural Development Program appears to be kind of the front runner or kind of biggest bang for our buck as far as getting assistance on the project. They have submitted to us a proposed financing package that includes, of that $3.2 million project cost, a grant option of almost $1.2 million of grant funds. So essentially kind of free money to kind of get the project going. That represents a significant chunk. The remaining portion of the loan, the $1.7 million, would be financed over 40 years at an interest rate of 1.875%, which is outstanding considering what we're seeing. Construction costs and material prices are escalating significantly more than that. To put that into terms, too, as far as what that total debt service is going to look like, that's roughly $65,000 annually that we'd have to pay for this project. So what I'm here to ask of the subcommittee is to authorize or to recommend to the board to authorize the general manager to be able to start filling out some of the additional documentation required to work with the USDA Rural Development Office. How that would work, too, there's a number of different steps we'd have to go through, including once the project's fully designed, we would bid it out. Come back to you more than likely, probably in that October-November timeframe with a construction cost, as well as have easements secured by then, and then hopefully, depending on contractor availability, start construction next spring, and construction, you know, could take anywhere from 6 months to 12 months, and with the intent of being operational a year from next spring.
Thank you.
Where's the grant money coming from?
So the Rural Development Office, they essentially have a huge pot of money nationwide that they can award to projects like this. In the past, I don't believe we've received rural development money since the original inception of these systems.
Is there any obligation?
Nope. As long as we meet the criteria and how we go about negotiating with landowners for easements, and as long as it's built per specifications that are approved by the Department of Health and Human Services, there's no obligation as long as we actually then make the loan payment portion of it.
And then it says there that the district's portion is reimbursed by the I've read up there somewhere. It gets reimbursed. How much is that?
Through the Game and Parks. So how we have an operating agreement right now with Nebraska Game and Parks for the operation of the Danish Alps Recreation Area, where at the end of the year we review all the expenses we put in the park, and there's a formula as far as how much they collect in, from rental fees out there. So depending on kind of how those numbers shake out, there's a possibility they could be paying majority of the cost because we're essentially doing this as an improvement to the lake.
Does that come out of our budget then?
As of right now, this would show up, so that debt payment of the $65,000 would show up in our budget, and then there would be, depending on any given year, a good portion of that would get reimbursed by the Game and Parks.
That's the year. Also, the rural water system. So It won't be a full 65 on the district. That's the max.
Yep.
And then rural water will pay. Their share will be consistent. Game Park, half of it or two-thirds of it.
So basically whatever we would put in, we're covered. So So we don't have any uh-ohs. If they don't, if say they give you 5,000, we're still good.
And we pick up the rest.
Okay, correct.
That was part of my question. How much is a game in parks? I just want to make a note of I've got a guy that calls me every few weeks about this, wondering what the process is and the projection of when this might be done, because he's kind of the point man for the people up there. They're very, very anxious to have this process project done because they've got really bad water. And they sink wells, and the wells are almost non-drinkable. I mean, they spend $20,000 on a well. And very, very happy to see that this is progressing, and I would highly recommend that. You know, it's not going to cost us much, but this is exactly what an NRD should be doing.
Yeah, this is huge. I think without the grant money and without a loan at that low of an interest rate, I mean, this project just isn't feasible. You know, it's too many miles of pipe kind of out in the middle of nowhere, and so kind of with those federal funds, it really makes it something that's attainable to get water out there.
Zach,
can you estimate the number of new customers?
There's roughly capacity for probably 60 to 70 new customers out there. What's hard is in situations like this, of once it's in, you know, truly, you know, who can come up with, you know, $5,000 or $7,000, whatever that dollar amount ends up being for the connection fee. It's somewhat hard to project that. We anticipate probably at the very beginning, maybe we'll get 20 to 25 customers, and then hope that too, once everything's there, that kind of gets that vote of confidence, and then it eventually fills out to that 60% or 60 customers.
I had some people tell me that there might actually be additional housing built because they've got water.
Mm-hmm. Potentially, yeah. We've heard from a number of landowners out there, one in particular that spent over $20,000 on test wells and just can't hit anything good. So it's sorely needed out there for sure.
Chairman, so landowners that may want to sell lots, and then that, you know, they're going to start building lots of houses out there now once the this all comes through. I mean, I guess I can't stop progress, but doggone it, I didn't want to see that part of it. But is that what you can probably anticipate?
That could potentially happen. It's somewhat hard to speculate how, because these are large agricultural pieces of property, what someone might do to develop it. Who knows? There's definitely that potential there that someone could do that, but I would venture to say that probably that probably happen over a long course period of time. I don't anticipate next year all of a sudden you see 100 new houses lining the lake. I don't think that's realistic.
Thank you.
Roll call.
Keith?
Yes.
Tyler?
Yes.
Jack?
Yes.
Yeah.
And Chairperson?
Hi. Thanks, Zach. Item number 9, review and recommendation of interlocal agreement with the City of Omaha, West Papio Trail Drainage Improvements. Eric Williams.
Yep. Good afternoon, everyone. Don't you have the map? This is an interlocal agreement with the City of Omaha. Let's see. This will work fine. On this map, what we're looking at is the West Papio Creek. In the upper left, you can see a slanted road about 45 degrees. The north side of that road is the current trailhead of the West Papio Trail at 137th and Millard Ave. In the lower right-hand corner where it says Area D, you can see the creek comes down right next to Harry Anderson Ave. The trail does extend up along Harry Anderson Ave up to Q Street, but the section here between 137th and Harry Anderson Ave, we are working toward construction of the last piece of the West Papio Trail that's called the Millard Connection. We have applied for and have been awarded, have been budgeted federal funding for 80% of the cost of the trail project. We've been working with the City of Omaha on understanding what other infrastructure projects in the area need to be completed prior to being able to construct the trail. Right at the location where it says Area C, that's the 132nd Street Bridge crossing the West Papio Creek. And on the east side of the bridge, to the right of the page here, is the outlet of the Millard area drainage way. So in the old lumberyard area, there's a kind of a creek with some gabion baskets that we helped to stabilize a number of years ago. All of that goes underground and is in a pipe and outlets on the north or the left bank of the West Papio Creek and dumps directly south along the downstream side of the 132nd Street Bridge. If you can go to the couple maps forward here. One more, please. This is the conceptual study that the NRD had contracted in order to understand where the trail would eventually go through this location. One more, please. This study led to identifying that right here at this location, the trail would underpass the 132nd Street Bridge, but in the small boxed area with the outline, we identified that there was a need to reconstruct the outlet of that large 108-inch stormwater pipe into the creek, and that would serve several purposes. One, the current location of the outlet structure points directly across and is eroding the south bank and threatening the footing of the bridge on the south side of the creek. So it's threatening the bridge, it's eroding the bank, and it also is not positioned in a way that the trail could be constructed in this area without reconstructing the end portion, the outlet of that large pipe, that large stormwater pipe. So this project and another drainage project were kicked out of the trail project, and the City of Omaha has been moving forward with the design of these. Through the design process, it was realized that this project is a little bit, actually quite a lot larger than originally expected. And so Omaha is at 60% plans on reconstruction of the outlet of the stormwater pipe to include an extension over the existing sanitary pipe, then a drop structure down, and a new outlet structure pointed downstream to avoid eroding the bank of the creek and threatening the bridge, and allowing 14 foot of cover so that the trail can go over the new structure, under the 132nd Street Bridge, come back up on the bank to the north and west, and continue over to the existing trail. So we've been coordinating with the City of Omaha Public Works Department on this for about the last 2 years, and they are at 60% plans on the structure itself. And in order to construct that structure in a way that accommodates the future trail, they have made some changes to the design which they otherwise might have used in this location. A very low cost and not very comprehensive project might have included only rock stabilization in this location. That would not have met the needs of the trail. It would not really have protected the bridge very well. It would not have corrected the outlet of the stormwater pipe. The more comprehensive project does address all of those features, all of those needs with one single project, but it does have additional cost. So Omaha has requested that the NRD participate in the cost of the stormwater management project in this location because it will eventually lead to us being able to design and construct the trail in this location as well. This is a portion of the overall cost. The memo highlights that the current expected cost for the drainage structure project is about $1.9 million. So the way we came up with the NRD reimbursement is the difference between the original expected cost of a very inexpensive project and the new project. And then we talked about contributing to half of the cost difference between a lower project and the project that needs to be constructed in order to accommodate the trail. That's what led to the NRD's cost share recommendation of $500,000, which would be $250,000 in each of the next two budget years. So the recommendation is to approve an interlocal specifying that the NRD will reimburse Omaha in each of the next two fiscal years for the cost of this stormwater structure. They will take the plans to 90% and expect to bid this in about September, begin construction over the fall and have it done in the winter or in the spring. And then we will move to the design and construction of the trail, which again has that federal funding but has been kind of on hold in order to allow this project to be done before the trail design began. So again, the recommendation is just to authorize the general manager to execute this interlocal agreement. It is a fixed dollar amount, and Omaha understands that if there are additional costs, this is not a percentage-based cost share. This is just a fixed dollar amount, so our contribution will not increase. The cost has gone up just a little bit over the last month or two based on some geotech investigation that was done, but we are quite confident now that the cost from the 60% estimate should be good from here forward as they get ready for bidding. And we'd recommend partnering with Omaha for the reconstruction of this project. It helps meet stormwater needs now, and it prepares for the trail construction in the future.
Thank you. Anyone have questions regarding the project? Roll call. Motion. Oh, that's right.
I'll move.
Okay. Second?
Second.
Roll call. You got a question?
$250,000 per year for 2 years. Is that fixed?
Yes, it is. So it's not a percentage cost share like we do with some of the urban cost share programs in other locations. This is just a flat dollar amount. It will not change from here forward.
What, and you also mentioned federal funds for the trail upcoming. What percentage of federal funds would pay for it?
The trail project is under the Transportation Alternative Program, which is 80% federal and 20% local. In the interlocal, you'll see a whereas paragraph at the beginning that indicates that the NRD anticipates construction of the trail. That's not binding language, but it's just informative for the intent of the agreement. It does also indicate that we expect contribution from the City of Omaha toward the local portion of the trail construction. And so we expect that it will be 80% federal funded and then 10% NRD and 10% Omaha funded for the construction of the trail. The federal allocation there, I think, is $1.7 million, leaving about $400,000 local share, meaning about $200,000 NRD and about $200,000 City of Omaha. And then when completed, Omaha, as with other trails, agrees to receive, operate, and maintain the trail from there forward. And so that is indicated in some of the introductory language, but it isn't binding at this point because it is a separate project. It's just clarifying that we do expect there will be an additional future agreement for the local share of the trail when we get to that project.
How far is the trail?
This is about 3/4 of a mile. And it crosses under three bridges and has some other large infrastructure pieces between Harry Anderson Ave, where we built the last project, and Millard Ave.
All we're concerned about right here is the underpass.
Yeah, we originally did study this structure as part of the conceptual study for the trail, but realized it's probably going to be pretty complicated from a federal review process to build that structure as part of a trail project. We decided to work with Omaha. They said they would kick that out and do that separately. That project then grew in scope quite a lot through some of the original design work, and that's led to them asking for assistance on this project with the expectation we will ask for assistance on the trail project when we get there.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
Tyler?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Steve?
Yes.
Peter?
Yes.
Hi, thanks a lot. Item number 10. Your recommendation of interlocal agreement with the City of Fremont, Dodge County, and Lower Platte North NRD for Platte River cameras and sensors.
Good evening. If you go to the second page of the map showing the different locations there. In working with Lower Platte North and Dodge County and the City of Fremont, we've tried to plan ahead after the 2019 floods. It was realized it'd be better to have some eyes out there all the time, which we were looking at having cameras installed. And it'd also be good to have a couple additional areas where sensors are telling you what the flood level is, what the water level is, so that you know what you're seeing on the camera correlates to something in terms of water levels. So we've worked out a project where we're proposing to submit an HMGP grant. Dodge County is going to do that on behalf of all the partners. And if we get that grant, we'll split the local share. But the agreement's set up so that even if we don't get the grant, we split everything up and still do the project. Right now, the project's set up to be in a couple phases. One is to put cameras facing upstream at all these project sites and two different sensors. And then if awarded the grant, I think we would see how that goes, but then move into phase two, which is to point cameras downstream at each of these locations as well, so that you are able to see quite a bit of the river from these six different locations. So what we're looking at would be an interlocal agreement with Lower Platte North, Dodge County, and the City of Fremont, where we're all equally splitting the amount. So our maximum, if we didn't get the grant, would be $6,750. And then if we did get the grant, it would be closer to just $1,700. So if you want to go back up to the memo there real quick.
Who's going to be monitoring the cameras? I mean, who's
looking? Lower Platte North has already done quite a bit of work with the camera supplier and setting up some mounts to put them on. So they're going to take over both the responsibility to install these cameras and then maintain them.
Look at the camera also or not?
I don't, The intent right now isn't to make them fully public, but yes, every partner will have capability to go on and look at all the.
So we, pictures. NRD, could look at the pictures also.
Yeah, we'll certainly be involved in doing that. Yep.
Right, that would make sense.
Okay. Yeah, we got permits from DOT.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was wanting to know if one of the strategic sites to place the camera might be, if they still exist, though, those water quality monitoring stations in the Platte that kept getting vandalized. Do they still exist, or and if we can have a camera that sort of do two things, keep, you know, see if vandals are there, and plus watch the river.
The only site that I know of that's co-located is the LaShera site at Highway 64 there. And so initially the camera looking upstream won't be able to see that.
Okay.
Maybe the one downstream might be able to see it, but it'd be tough because that's over on the bank and we're really trying to look at the river itself and what's going on.
Well, just an idea.
Yeah.
Frank DeWeese.
Yeah. Who are the people that are going to be monitoring these cameras for this company? Do they know specifically what they're looking at, if there's a possibility of a jam coming? Or, I mean, wouldn't it be better if our people kind of looked at that to
we will, we,
if it's a jam or not, because we're more familiar with what we're looking at?
Yeah, we'll be the ones monitoring the cameras.
Okay,
so.
I thought you said they would look at it.
No, they're just helping install it, and that's Lower Platte North, so they're going to look at them,
okay,
too.
I misunderstood.
Yep.
At the last year at the county annual meeting, at the basin meeting, I presented this idea about installing cameras up and down the river, and I was kind of surprised Lower Platte North decided to run with it, and I was really thrilled that they wouldn't, because I was driving up to North Bend twice a day to look at the river, and it's amazing, you can get a reading of, 7 foot, but in reality it may be 9 foot and all jammed up. I mean, it's you need those eyes constantly. That's why I really was pushing for this.
Roll call.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes.
Hi. Thank you. I guess you're up again, Paul. Number 11, review and recommendation of the Water Sustainability Fund grant application for the Lower Platte NRD 3D AEM hydraulic framework assessment.
Okay, last, but that's a mouthful. What we're doing with this is basically using the AEM data that all the NRDs, or us three NRDs, have worked to collect and build upon, and that which we're going to be collecting this summer. That project's on track after you approve that, and we've got the Water Sustainability Fund grant for part of that too. That work's going to be going on. So if you go to the last page in the document, it's probably the best map to show you everything that just scroll down there. So pretty much Lower Platte North and Lower Platte South, everything in red is already collected. We already have that AEM data. And then the blue is the additional area we're going to be getting data back on. So what the proposal here is to look at all of that data and do what basically Lower Elkhorn has already done. So if I was showing what Lower Elkhorn had, they had basically a 3-mile grid throughout their district too. They've already gone through this process where, and in this case, JEO is doing that work for them with Leonard Rice Engineers. And this program, kind of like the Geocene 3D program that we've used, but it's a different one called LeapFrog, incorporates all the AEM data into it and then starts, based on well logs, starts assigning different layers and basically building a set of layers that will go into the groundwater model itself. So so I think what we've got here is we have a lot of our three NRDs do have a lot of detailed areas where we've got a lot of flight lines. So they have kind of worked with DNR and perfected the process of doing this. So we're seeing some benefits from, in terms of cost, from Lower Elkhorn and them already going through that. But we have a lot of miles to look at. So that's probably one of the reasons we're at the cost estimate that we're at. So go back up to that. What we propose to do is to, let's go to that right there. What we propose to do is just get a grant just under $250,000, kind of squeak it in there. And then the remaining balance, not considering DNR would also put some cash forward, but in working with them, they just had $13,000 per NRD. The NRDs would make up the other part, which is more than our required 40%, or it's not more than our 60-40 match, so we're getting back down to 40%, I guess, is the point there. But that would be the proposed grant that we would submit, and I guess if we were able to get the grant, then we would, the PAPIO would be probably the lead on the interlocal agreement in which we would get the grant here and administer getting the money from Lower Platte South and Lower Platte North. And then paying out, so we'd have to either go through the RFP process or decide that we wanted to stick with the LeapFrog program and JO, which we'll decide at a later date. But we would have to go through that process as well and then basically try to get probably somebody on board towards the beginning of 2021 and start working through that, because that'll be when we'll just be getting, we can start work on what we already have in terms of AEM data, but it'd be nice to get all of our data back and just kind of let them run with it and get it all worked together. So right now what we're just proposing is just the authorization to submit the grant. And later what we'd do, if the grant was obtained, we'd come back with the interlocal agreement and probably a process to select a consultant. Yep.
Do we have a motion on this? Second?
Second.
Questions regarding the grant?
Last time we talked about this, but it never is. Is this, is it for additional scanning or just for the research or investigating what the results are of the scans already done, the helicopter stuff? Is this for more scans and then analysis, or is it just to investigate the analysis of what's already been done?
Yeah, it's just to take the analysis, the data that's already been collected, and actually put it into a format that we can put it into the groundwater model. Currently, the information that we got from the AEM data does have some geologic layers in it, as far as like the top of bedrock or the bottom of the other layer. But we need what the model ended up being is like four or five layers in there of sands and gravels and other things. And what we need that for is because basically right now, after an early review of what DNR, DNR presented the Missouri tributaries model. And after the Lower Platte NRDs and those that are in NRA have looked at that model, we feel that it just doesn't do a very good job of representing the geology and the groundwater that we have. So what would result from that is they could use that model and it would overestimate the impact that we have on terms of this hydrologic connection. It would probably show that we have more influence on the streams than we actually do. And so we'd be potentially over-regulating areas in our district and other districts that wouldn't have to happen. So this is a step in getting to ready to take it into a model. In terms of whether it's the last step, I kind of don't know exactly for sure. We'd have to decide who would do the actual final model. DNR is at some point willing to take the information that we get from this study and put that into the next model. We have to kind of see if that's what the other partners want to do or not. In their areas, they might be considering their boards might want to see an independent model and look at what's going on. So we'll still see what's going on with that, but we're getting close.
$500,000 just to study the effect of what we've already done, correct?
No, it's to take what we've already done and put it into a set of layers that the geologic or the groundwater model can work with. We don't have this information already, otherwise we'd just use
it. But that's what it's for, is to give more detailed analysis of what's already been done by the helicopter scanning, correct?
Yeah, it's using that.
So this, what we're trying to get a grant for, to have this done, has this been done anywhere else successfully?
Yeah, this is exactly when she said that Lower Elkhorn NRD had taken all this and done a model with, worked with DNR.
They've already done that. And you've seen this, and it looks like it's something that is useful?
Yeah, it completely changed the model that they had up there. And it, I guess it took, DNR was probably with what they were showing going to make the entire Lower Elkhorn NRD hydrologically connected, which from a lot of geologic senses doesn't make any sense at all. Their new model shows a lot more detail and is able to define those areas better so that we're not just saying, hey, everybody, you're impacting the streams. Let's regulate everybody the same. It's kind of what NRDs were set up to do, is to be able to implement groundwater requirements on a smaller scale without just widespread, this is the requirement, you must follow it type of thing.
Lower Elkhorn analysis, then we will have any type of. So really, now it's going to be an apples to apples comparison, not.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just more of a comment, but I've said this before, and I was really hoping they're doing this in other NRDs out state Nebraska. I mean, because it's quite important, as I understand, the overdrawing of the Ogallala Aquifer, huge cattle lots, feed lots, and so forth, just drawing down. And so I guess, can you pinpoint who's doing what, where, and when? And then when you're doing the regulations and so forth, or, you know, start to restrict or then ease back. And I think this is my, I recommend this, the committee to pass this, even though I'm not on the committee, but, you know, I think it's quite important. So.
Any other questions?
Roll call.
Yes.
Aye. And that concludes the committee.
Anybody need to take a break? Seeing no hands, at 5 o'clock, we'll call the FEL subcommittee to order. Notification Open Meeting Act. It is posted on the back board in the back hallway. With that, item 3, quorum call.
I have misplaced my voting sheet.
Uh-oh.
Here.
Bradley?
Here.
McCormick?
Here.
Wees?
Here.
Jefferson?
Yes, here. Item four, adoption agenda.
So move.
Roll call.
Yes.
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 Bradley?
Aye.
And Caesar?
Item five, proof of publication of meeting notice. I have it before me. Moving on to item six, review the recommendation of 2021 budget draft. General Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Some of this will be a repeat from last night, but I will be brief as everyone's kind of had the budget to look it over. This is the first draft, so obviously there's a lot of unknowns. And for example, the evaluation, the assessed valuation from the counties will not be known until later in August when we actually know the true valuation increase. And then also there's some additional changes that will be made from this draft to the second draft to the final one that's adopted in September. As you know, the final budget needs to be adopted in September, and then it needs to be forwarded to the auditor treasurer's office for final filing September 30th. The budget this year, we're anticipating keeping or proposing to keep the property tax mill levy the same at 0.037384. The actual budget has reduced $36,141,893 from last year. The property tax value levy of 0.0373, property valued at $100,000 would be $37.30 a year or $3.10 a month. Property valued at $150,000 a year would at $55.95 a year or $4.66 a month. Historically, the district's tax levy has been 2% or less of your total property tax requirement, including school districts and everything else. For comparison, Douglas County is 29 and a half cents, Washington County 32, Sarpy County 29, Dakota County 33, Omaha 47, Bennington 77, Bellevue 61, OPS is $1.24, Bennington Public Schools is $1.43, Fort Calhoun Public Schools is $1.31, Springfield is 71 cents, Metro Community College gets 9 cents, Papillion 45, and even the Millard Fire District gets 13, and we get 3. As you know, we're statutory limited to 4.5 cents per 100. And so we as a district could never exceed that amount without statutory change or approval. Out of the 15 out of the last 16 years, the district has either lowered or kept its mill levy the same. We lowered it 8 years. We kept it the same 7 years. We raised it 1 year. Overall of that period, the overall property tax increase, the actual money that we generated, has been about 3.1 to 3.5%. That's been the average per year. Now, this year we're proposing a 4.5% increase, and again, we won't know what that is until we actually get the numbers back from the assessor's office. So it could be higher, it could be lower. So we'll have to be prepared to make adjustments for that. I talked a little bit last evening about just the budgeting philosophy and what we go through every year. Some of you weren't there, unfortunately, but you know, so the district has always kept kind of a steady, methodical approach to budgeting. We don't have very wild swings in either spending or our tax levy. And so what we've attempted to do was to get projects done and timely. And again, we find as much money as we can from other sources, if that's state, federal, or local sources as well. So this budget contemplates the minimum requirements to operate the district, and that's either through contracts, interlocal agreements, our statutory obligations, and all those types of things that we and you approve through the years or past years as well. We also talked about a little bit about expenses. Crushed rock is going up 4%, 4.7 to 5% a year. Pipe materials is 3 to 5% a year. The contractor work for bank stabilization projects, which we do a ton, is 5% a year, has averaged over the that time. Health insurance, it will increase 7.5% this year. It's been 4.5 to 5% average over the last 10 years. So you know, nothing is static. We also talked a little bit about you know, we had the flood last year, the historic flood, which made it kind of an unusual budget year that year. Well, then we come back this year and we have a pandemic. So we aren't blind to the economy here in the state or the country. And so we took a lot of analysis and looking at what the state is, how the state of the, as far as the employment rate, as far as tax collections. I had Carrie go back and we looked at the last, what I call the last economic shock we had was the Great Recession, 2007 to 2011. And we analyzed our property tax collection during that time. I wanted to know if that really impacted what we were collecting, and it didn't. And so the state's numbers have been bad, but not as bad as the rest of the country. Income tax obviously was delayed until July 17th filing, so they're expecting that to recover somewhat. Sales tax is down, but not as drastically as it was. And again, Nebraska, I think, has weathered the storm better than most. So in that, we were going to propose to bond this fiscal year for flood control projects, and that was going to be anywhere from $25 to $30 million. And we were going to try to keep our budget about the same. However, we decided against that. That would obviously add a little bit to the levy. Instead of keeping it the same, it would have kicked it up. And we made other reductions as well, not just taking out bonding, to get to this particular number. And although that's a little bit of a dual-edged sword, the municipal bond rate is in the floor. You can get money 2% or less, and but we thought maybe that probably wasn't maybe the right time to go and absorb another $25 or $30 million in debt. Although, when in fact we may need to do that, I don't expect interest rates to be where they are, but that's just something that we have to chance, I guess. So we're proposing, again, a budget of $83,837,482. The total property tax revenue request would be $27,292,882. And if you want to go through specific budget items, we can. I did on Tuesday. And I can go through them again if you'd like, or anything that maybe you had a question on from either last night or that you looked at yourself. One item of note is, if you look on the front page, the resources and requirements, last year we expended 72% of our revenue, and that's a pretty good number for us. Usually we've been in the 40 to 50, 60% range. So I would say we've just been, maybe we're getting more efficient, but maybe also we've got a break in weather and other factors that tend to delay our projects. Or partners that we work with aren't getting their end of the bargain done. So we're expending the funds that we budgeted, and we're getting projects done, which is a good thing. That obviously is the intent of this budget. One thing about budgets is, again, they're either based off of real estimates that we have or they're estimates that we are, not say guessing, but we have an educated guess of what they may be. We'll actually have the actual, if it's for insurance cost or other things like that, we actually have a rate or a number that we're going with. So it is a budget is a living, breathing type of thing. It changes within the year. If you'll notice, and we talked about this again last night, we have a 47-page document budget. And the state requires about an 8-page submittal. And if you look on Douglas County's website, if you look on the city's Omaha's website, if you look at a school district's website, you look at their budgets, you'll be lucky if you get 8 to 10, maybe 12 pages if you're extremely lucky. So this is a very thorough budget. Everything is broken down into either revenue categories or expense categories. And so we've attempted to make that very easy for not only the board but for the public to also go through and see exactly what's being spent, what projects are priorities, what projects we're funding. So it's very transparent. And so we want to be able to do that for, obviously, the reasons that I just laid out. So it's not much different. Our budget is not much different than last year. It's not much different than the year before that or the year before that. It's very consistent. We have projects that we prioritize. We have programs that we prioritize, and we fund them. And we try to fund them at consistent levels year after year. Like I said, we don't get huge wild swings in either our expenditures or our revenue. Because of our budgeting, we're able to, we're able to absorb things like happened March of last year, where we had $5, $6 million in expenditures that we're still waiting to get the majority of it reimbursed by FEMA. So we're able to absorb that. We're able to do those things without going to the bank or finding other financing to bridge those. If you look at our cash on hand, it's been decreasing over the years as we're expending funds that were obligated to the district by, for example, the other entities like the City of Omaha, Sarpy County, and Bellevue, who paid up front for a project to be completed, which was the Missouri River levees or the Offutt levees. And so that for a couple years was reflected as cash on hand. And so we go down the legislature and they say, well, you don't need bonding because look at all the money you got sitting around. Well, that money sitting around was obligated to construct projects. And so as you can see in this budget, it went from $9 million to $7 million. Why? Because we're constructing those. We're expending those funds. We're doing what we've told people that we were going to do. So, again, I'd like to, if anybody wants to go through individual budget items, more than happy to. Or if you have a question after this meeting or any time up before August or September, let me know. But, again, these numbers will change, not drastically, but they will change. So the goal has been to keep the levy the same, and then we're expecting a 4.5% increase. That's what we use, and that's what most governmental entities use to cover the increase in cost of just those things that I mentioned. So the pandemic didn't make anything cheaper. In fact, as Zach said, some of the construction costs are going back up, and the material costs are going back up. So it's not going to stay static for very long if we did save anything. So that's a little bit of the philosophy of what we do and what our numbers are. And so I'd be happy to answer any question. Again, there's no action on this tonight. We will act on the first. You'll vote in August to submit that draft for final approval in September. So any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Okay.
John, if you wish to speak, I'm going to limit you to 3 minutes.
New clock. Sean Lotz, 10404 North 132nd Street, Omaha. I've come before you to ask a couple things with respect to the budget. And first, I'd like to point out that it's actually a 7% increase in property taxes, because when I look at the numbers, I compare it to the actual collected, which is what comes out of my pocket, versus what I'm going to pay, which is also coming out of my pocket. So what I see is a $1.8 million increase to property taxes that we're all going to pay. And I'd request that the FEL committee and the board consider taking the initiative to lower this budget by this $1.8 million increase. As a CPA and a consultant to multiple clients, I've spent the last 3 months not preparing tax returns, but assisting these clients in the process through which to work through their financial stress during this period. It's been a long process. It's very unique to me and probably most CPAs in this town. But everybody has a problem. Everybody's struggling with cash flows. So I think while you try to explain that this is just a small amount in everybody's cash flows, somebody needs to start the process of lowering property taxes. And if this group can be the start, I mean, more power to you. Couple things that I'd like to ask for a little more detail within the budget. On page 3, where you highlighted the health insurance, I'm still not sure about the math on how you're getting this increase. What I did was I did look at the last couple years' actual health insurance paid. And what I saw was in 2018, it was $617,000. 2019, it was $649,000. And in 2020, it was $665,000. So if I start with your cost of $665, a 7.5% increase would be $715, not $895,000. So I would ask you to readdress this to see.
I can readdress that now. The budget, that does not just reflect what the increase would be. For example, we have 50-some employees. If a employee goes from single to family, that affects the rate. Or if a we hire an additional person, that reflects the rate. So there's additional money that's budgeted in those budget items that just doesn't reflect a 7.5% increase. So we can't list every employee and what their coverage is. So those numbers not only reflect the increase in what we're expecting from the increase from the insurance company, but also as families change, employee situation changes, you have to be able to adjust that. So I can't go ask one of my employees, are you getting married this year and are you going to have kids this year? That's protected, so I can't just do that. So we have to assume, we have to try to make those estimates of when that will happen. So that's why those numbers are different.
Well, as part of that, I understand where you're going, but I would also like to point out that all three of these years, including this year, you're $150,000 over budget in almost every one of the years, and a couple of them were over $200,000. And I think $200,000 is a pretty large cost on anticipating an employee or a change in employee. On page 9 of the report, there's a budgeted item under land rights for $2 million. If you could explain what those dollars are specifically allocated for. They weren't on the budget. And you can get these numbers to me later, John, if it's easier too.
Yeah, if you can provide those,
I have those here. And then on page 12, I noticed that there's no longer a reserve for the Missouri River certification. So you're anticipating that to be 100% complete by the end of the fiscal year of June?
No.
Then should there not be a reserve on there? No, but you're not having anything move forward. Okay, so the anticipation is that it'll be. Okay. Also.
Sean, I'm going to have to cut you off here.
Well, I have two more questions, and I'd like to continue if I may.
If you. Can you direct these to the general manager and have him respond?
Well, I can. So. Two things. One, I would like a detail, if you can, if it's handy, of what costs are included in this budget for the flood and what revenues you're anticipating that came in from the FEMA money. And then one thing I'd like to point out is, and I understand this is a moving budget, but there were three items that were voted on at the PPO that impact this budget that I'm sure you're going to adopt. But the biggest one that I saw was the last agenda item. And it's kind of confusing to me. On page 21, the ENWRA, the budgeted expenditures on that is a negative 544, but in the presentation, it was my understanding that the out-of-pocket costing in NRD was 74. So that's an issue that I kind of had a question on.
To apply for a water sustainability fund grant. That will move forward until the grant.
And that grant money was in here, in your budget.
Okay.
So that's a net number. It wasn't the 74,000. It was 544,000 as an impact. So.
And the district has submitted. We submitted 12 projects to FEMA. Exactly. For 2.2 million. Was it 2,007,522? Four of those applications have been paid. Two are approved and reviewed, but haven't been paid yet for a total of $550,048. Projects are in various stages of approval for a total of $1,590,669. But we can get you the exact.
And they're in the budget,
in the
I
budget.
Take it.
Yep.
Okay.
And that revenue is in the budget as well.
Okay.
That we're waiting for, not that's been paid. That's already considered in the cash.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for the extra time.
Thank you.
Item 7, review and recommendation of 2021 budget bid computation 1% resolution, General Winkler.
All right, thank you. Let me get my folder here. I hope it fits right side up. Okay, so it was. So each year, we're allowed a 2.5% levy increase, or excuse me, a restricted funds increase by 2.5%. Every year, the board can choose to increase that by an additional 1%. Approval requires a supermajority of the board present for the vote. An increase in the restricted fund does not mean a tax increase or a levy increase. It simply covers the cost of inflation, which the cost I mentioned. So when you have 2.5% restricted funds every year, but you're chasing 4.5% to 5%, you start to lose that flexibility and that ability to respond appropriately to budget situations. So the 2.5% lid applies to general expenditures such as director's per diem, district's insurance coverage, which I indicated is increasing by 7.5%, equipment and vehicles, salaries, payroll taxes, building maintenance, park and structure maintenance, which is 5% or higher, conservation assistant payments, gas, oil, and vehicle repairs, utilities. The following items are lid exceptions: payments on bonded debt, capital improvements, interlocal agreements with public agencies, and repairs to infrastructure damaged by a natural disaster. So it has to be damaged by a natural disaster, which occurred last year, to be a lid restriction. So what it does is it gives the board and us the ability to be flexible in our budgeting. For example, if we got to the point where we're that close to the lid, when we purchase vehicles, we may have to lease those instead of outright purchase those. And so now you're paying a lease interest rate instead of actually purchasing the piece of equipment. If it's a bulldozer or a pickup or whatever, you're actually leasing that. And so that could, you know, that's going to cost a little additional money to do that. So we listed kind of the past results in the last 10 years of the levy to be able to get the 1% increase. And so we would recommend that that's approved. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
I just want to mention the NARD on the insurance going 7.5%, but the recommendation from was actually a lot higher, and the NARD board decided to take a chance and hope, you know, we're just going to kind of keep our fingers crossed that we won't have big claims this year.
Right.
But that could very well be one of those items where we're going to get caught.
Right. And so Rich and I are on...
This would help.
All right. Rich and I are on the various committees. Rich is on the NARD exec committee that looks at that, and I'm on the manager's committee. And so at the 7.5%, he's correct. We knew our claims were higher. A little bit about the insurance, for those that don't know, it's a self-funded plan. But again, we've averaged 4.5%. We even had an actual reduction a few years ago where it was less than 1%. But we actually, the actuaries that we talked about said if this was a Blue Cross Blue Shield plan, Aetna or whatever, you would be looking at a 20 to 25% increase in premiums because they try to make their money all back at one time. And so so to keep it at where it was or where we actually got it approved at was good for everybody. But we've had other entities that have tried to communicate with the NARD that they wanted on our plan because the rates have been so low and the coverage is good, and they wanted in on it. But obviously it can only be the NARD system, is according to the Department of Insurance and all the regulations that we have to deal with. So, but Rich is right, it should have been a lot higher. Minimum was 15, and it would probably been most likely 25 to 30 in a normal market with like a Blue Cross Blue Shield or Mutual of Omaha. So any other questions?
Any questions from any directors?
I think you need a motion. I think
I move with the staff recommendation.
Right. You move on?
Staff recommendation, yes.
Second. Yeah. Any discussion? Roll call.
No.
Aye.
Yes.
Yes. Carries. Moving on, hopefully. Hi, Sam. Lost my place, guys. I apologize. Review the recommendation of ICM contributions account 01035364195 over 110%. Amanda, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Hopefully you can hear me okay. Not all.
I'm kind of struggling hearing you, Amanda. I apologize.
Okay. I thought maybe that would be a problem. So the account we're talking about tonight is the account that we use from the general fund that then goes into the ICM account that makes up the $150,000 that we have an interlocal agreement with a number of other parties to maintain. So this is from our general fund into the ICM account. And generally what we do is bill from the previous year, then we bill those expenses forward. And so I thought it would be a good idea to bill the last 2 years together, and then the timing of my invoice was such that that put us over 110%. So this would be the district's portion from the 2018-2019 ICEJAM year, where we actually had the contractor come up and they were about to start work, and then we had the flood. And then last year's was just the retainer, and we had negotiated that new annual retainer for them. So if you would approve this tonight, it would put the maximum from that account at $13,087 for this fiscal year, but then we would not have a contribution in fiscal year 21. So the recommendation is to go over 110% up to that maximum of $13,087 in that account.
Okay. A second?
Second.
Second. You know, I've had, I'm going to make a comment if I could. I've had some concerns about this, John, as you and I have discussed. I'm very worried that $150,000 is not high enough. And I think that, you know, we ought to be talking to our partners about giving that up, you know, another 50 or 100,000 because, you know, we've only got enough, what, 3 days of basically?
Yeah.
Give or take. And, you know, if we have an ice jam situation where the ice, we call them in and jams up and then nothing happens and it's still there, we may have to have these guys on board for, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 days, we don't know. And then, you know, we're picking up the tab ourselves. So it would be nice that if we could get a little bit a higher reserve or, you know, a little bit more in the kitty, in my opinion.
No, I agree. The price hasn't, the total that the ICEJAM account holds in escrow hasn't changed in a really long time. And it certainly hasn't changed since we've had the new contractor on board with new prices who come from out of town. And all of that. So it's definitely something that can be talked about with the partners and probably needs to be. So.
Any further discussion? Larry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I don't know if this question should have been while we're sort of going over the budget, but the ICEJAM, and speaking of such, the contractor we have for, you know, the DICON or the helicopter folks that would go up and down the river and drop dynamite and so forth. I was wondering how much it was increased 300%, they're proposed, the contract with us. What does it mean in dollars before, not, you know, dollars before and dollars after? What's that increase in dollars?
Sure. So our previous contract, and our contract is always just with DICON, and then they're responsible to find a helicopter pilot as part of that contract. So our previous agreement was a $2,000 retainer to DICON, and then in the event of an ice jam, and it probably shouldn't have been this way, but they scrambled somewhat to find someone who would do that. And you know, it's our sense of urgency when there's an ice jam, so we were kind of helping them find a helicopter pilot. Now, since in the meantime, and even in the last few years of their previous contract, and then that's included in their contract now that the board approved, is Hexagon Helicopters, which is their sub now, and that's someone that's out of Elkhorn. It's the same person we use to do inspections and things. So they've come up and trained with our DICON's come up and trained with Hexagon. And what Hexagon did in this last contract with DICON was they said, you know, we'll be prepared at any moment with the FFA license and the plan and the hazardous material plan and all of these details that are hard to put together at the last minute for sure. So that's what we're paying for. And what they're a sub to DICON, and they said we want $5,000 a year annual retainer. So DICON passed that on to us, and they said we'll keep ours at two, pay us a $7,000 retainer. So that's where we are today.
Okay, and for an ice jam and emergency, that isn't, to me, $7,000 isn't much of a big stretch. I was thinking it was, you know, tens or thousands of increase, but when they said 300%, but it's
it
not.
Seems like, but and it is still a lot more than we used to pay. But I will say the level of comfort that the Hexagon helicopter people have everything in line when it's time to go is, I mean, there's just no question they're going to have it, which is worth it.
Okay, thank you.
Did you say, Amanda, that there was an issue of scrambling to find somebody, a pilot before, and now that contract has changed, so we won't run into that now?
Right. So they did find someone when they had to come
we
up the last time.
We helped them do that.
We were kind of helping. They found a guy willing to do it, and he was coming from Kansas, and we kind of helped with figuring out what forms he would need, and, you know, he took it on, but it was not something that was in place from the minute we started, I guess.
That's solved going forward with your recommendation.
I remember a time where helicopter used to come out of eastern Iowa.
There was
and
a time.
Having, you know, either fly here and be here in 7 hours, you'd be ready for, you know, go to work. And you know, sometimes weather doesn't cooperate with you, and that could be a little tough. And so now we have a local helicopter pilot in, you know, operation. So we just have to get the dynamite people up here on time so they go to work. So
from Oklahoma, is that where they're at?
Tulsa.
Where does your explosives come from?
What's that?
Where do the explosives come up from?
Weeping Water.
The explosives come from Weeping Water. The people come from Tulsa.
Oh, okay. Because I was going to say, because I know we get ours from Weeping Water, so it's close. And one thing ahead of that you could do is see if you could put a magazine here, put it in here, so it's here. And then when you have, because you just go to the local fire department, get your authorizations, your permitting, but you can actually put it here, and then when you need it, it's here. You have a licensed, registered person that can take that explosive, transport it to a magazine that quick, wherever you need to go. And he's here.
I'll leave that to
that
John if we
time.
Want dynamite on site.
My safety committee might have a problem.
Yeah.
Here for us to find a local demolition or dynamite?
There are experts, and I mean, we've heard of a lot of people. I think it takes the right person, and you have to also be willing to do the helicopter piece of it too. And we went out for a bid, you know, in the whole Midwest years ago, and there just wasn't anybody. I mean, we're always open to it. Now that they've come a couple times and they've seen what happens, they're, you know, just more well-versed on how to handle an ice jam. So there's how do you handle an ice jam, some experience level there. But we're open to it.
They had trouble getting here last time.
They did. They did. The weather was terrible, and they had trouble getting here. It's not ideal.
Before 9/11, it wasn't a problem, but after 9/11, it really got to be, you know, kind of a problem about having
The insurance and things. Yeah, I mean, that's another piece. So you got to have a lot of different insurance.
Any other questions?
If it becomes a problem, I know an explosive group that's about 30 miles from here. Magazines on site. The only problem you'd have to arrange is you'd have to arrange the air part of it. 4 hours a day on call. Don't have to fly in.
Can we get a motion?
Yes.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Roll call.
Reese?
Yes.
Aye.
Bradley?
Yes.
Yes. That concludes our agenda. Thank you very much.